Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brock and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
Debbie Brock, founder of Homeopathy World Community. We're going to have a special co-host today, or a special guest. That is Heidi Stevenson. She'll be on with us in a few minutes. And we're saying hello to Alan Phillips, attorney at law from North Carolina, who is the world expert, I want to say, in exemptions and waivers for your vaccine rights. He helps us through the maze of vaccinations and legislative action. And we appreciate all of our listeners who come on each Thursday at noon to learn about what's happening in the world of vaccinations, not just in America, but around the world. And we appreciate when you get involved by tweeting on Twitter, posting this share button on Facebook, going to the social networks and clicking that Dig, StumbleUpon, Reddit, MySpace button so that other people who may not be aware of what's going on about loss of rights and forced vaccinations, things like that, we really need to protect ourselves. And if you wish, you can even copy the code from each of the shows and put it onto your blog or website so that people can listen directly on your own website. Why don't you favorite the show and become a regular listener or click the reminder button? Let me check in the background and see. Alan, it looks like Heidi is now with us, and we're going to introduce her in a moment. Just say hello, folks.
Hello.
Hi. Glad
you're
with
me?
Us. Yes, we can. Sounds good. And Alan, do you want to wave hello?
I'll wave hello here verbally. Boy, Heidi, I can't tell you how excited I am to have you on the show today. I've been a fan of yours, and I'm sure Debbie is as well, for a long time following your writings, and it's just really exciting to have a chance to talk with you about some of the things that you've been writing and so active about in the vaccine arena in particular.
I wanted to just introduce Heidi a little bit because when I first, she is a member of Homeopathy World Community. She is a homeopath and has a great deal of background in science and engineering, computer engineering, and maybe it's just programming. And every time she writes a new article, Heidi, you just shock me as to what people who are involved in this world of vaccinations are doing or misinterpreting, misreading, or just everything. And so I wanted to let folks know that they can find her on Gaia Health, G-A-I-A, Gaia Health, which I always thought was a huge corporation with a huge staff, and it's just you.
Just little old me. That's it.
That's the beauty of the internet, you know. We can all be out there equally with the internet.
It's true. Oh, and before we go on, I'd like to say to Alan that I've been a fan of Alan's for longer than he's been a fan of mine, because I've been a fan before Gaia Health ever existed.
Well, I appreciate that very much. Having your support means a lot, and you certainly have mine as well. Can you tell us a little bit of before we dive in some of the meat? Can you tell us a little bit about Gaia Health and what got you into this work?
Well, that's not really an easy question to answer. I'm a writer at heart. I discovered that quite by accident when I was in my 30s, which is a long time ago. And my career as a computer programmer and, you know, related things came to an abrupt halt from an iatrogenic disease, and Gaia Health ended up popping up as a result. I also became a homeopath as a result, although I'm not currently practicing, but I'm literally alive because of homeopathy, and so I have a very strong feeling about it. And it just all went from there. I don't know how to say it. It just kind of grew on me.
So a lot then out of personal experience as opposed to, you know, I'm in the luxurious position that I do not at all take for granted of having two very healthy children. And yet, of course, as you would expect, I hear from a lot of people who have damaged children, children injured by vaccines, and occasionally from people who have lost children to vaccines altogether. And that I'm fortunate to be able to say what drives my work is more the misfortunes of others than myself and my own children. But I tell you, I don't think there can be any greater motivator than having something affecting yourself directly or your family directly and seeing the results right there. So I can't imagine a stronger testimonial to homeopathy generally than what you just said. You're alive because of it. And I hope listeners will take that to heart if they're not already involved with homeopathy and look further into it, whatever their level of interest and experience is.
When we go on to her website, she has categories of interest. There's internet news, natural health, conventional medicine, diseases, the environment, politics, vaccines, and you even have an area of humor. So
can't help myself.
I don't know if all of your humor is ironic or actually just fun-loving humor, but I think it's probably mostly political humor.
It actually tends to be more along the side of irony,
yeah.
I'd say, more than anything else. It's not as much political on Gaia Health, to be honest. It's more related to the specific issues like vaccines and things like that.
But you really do a lot of investigative work, and we would love to learn how you do that and how you choose what you're going to write about each day.
Well, that's not really easy to answer, except to say I don't plan ahead much. I do have a zillion things on the back burner, so I could always pull something up at any time. And I don't necessarily write every day, and I might write more than one piece in a day. It just depends on what's there, what's in front of me. That's the beauty of what I'm doing here, is that I can do it on my own time when it fits. When I'm not really feeling like it, I don't.
And there's new stuff coming up all the time. So you actually, I would think, to be as effective as you can be as a writer on issues, be flexible to go with something that comes up unexpectedly that's turns out to be a really critical or important issue. And you certainly do that on a regular basis with the information I get. Now, you have a website, of course. But do you also have an email list that people can get on where they can stay apprised that way of what your current writings are about?
Well, I appreciate the question, and the answer is, well, sort of. People can sign up, and I do hope to be able to really get that going. But that's where doing this by myself becomes a real disadvantage. It does take time to produce a newsletter that I think is worth sending out. And as a result, I haven't sent one out in several months, and I feel very bad about it, but it's a matter of priorities. So
well,
I hope to get that going.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt there. I see postings about your articles and information throughout the alternative vaccine community, and I'm just delighted to be on the receiving end. My pandemicresponseproject.com website has a news page, and folks, if you look through that page, you'll see a lot of links to Heidi's articles. Well, why don't we, if you gals are ready, why don't we dive into some of your recent articles here, because you've got so much fascinating information. It seems like you must have a team of writers to put out as much as you do and with the depth and detail and information, but you're obviously quite skilled and adept at what you do.
Thank you. Well, I know that Debbie had indicated an interest in the flu mist vaccine that is being planned for every child in the UK very soon. And I wrote about, as a matter of fact, yesterday. The focus is on the concept of vaccines in general being pushed on everybody, and also on this particular one. And Debbie had asked me specifically about it in relation to allergies. And here's where I'm going to give you a surprising response. I'm going to say that, in general, I would not think that this is likely the worst approach to giving vaccines. Not that any of them are good. And I don't think that this is a good one either, for another reason. But in terms of being inducing allergies, it's probably not as bad as the injections. And to explain that is, well, the simple reason is that it's a more natural way to have something introduced to the body. So the body has a chance, through the mucous membranes, to actually adjust to these things being introduced to the body. And so the likelihood is probably not as great. Now, I'm speaking from a general knowledge point of view, not from having seen any specific studies about this vaccine and allergies.
But you raise a really good point, because one of the general criticisms we hear about vaccines is that they're introducing the disease component, the germ component, whatever it is, attenuated virus or bacterial or whatever, when done by injection in a manner that's not consistent with the way our body is designed and would normally encounter a wild germ and infection. And so the
Precisely.
Flu mist, at least, is a step, whether doing so with that in mind or not, is a step closer to, or at least arguably, a natural infection. So is that part of what your point is here then?
Well, it is in terms of allergies, but I have a big but to add to that one, and I think it's very significant. I think it does have the potential of introducing prion diseases. And if you know anything about them, like mad cow, those
mm-hmm.
are nothing to laugh about.
Is there a way to – I know none of these are short answer questions, but is there a way to give us kind of a quick summary or overview of what these prions are and what the risks or concerns involved are?
Well, prion diseases are untreatable unless somebody is treating them homeopathically, but that's a whole different approach to looking at disease. Prion diseases are believed to be the official line is that a prion disease is a bit of a protein, and it is they say it's an infectious agent, and that this bit of a protein that is not a life form, not even as close to a life form as a virus, enters the body and goes around causing the body to do terrible things to itself, and then it causes the body to somehow create more of these non-living entities that run rampant even more. That's the official. I personally don't believe it's the case. I have written on this topic recently, but the fact is, just a couple of years ago, do you remember the pig brain disease that workers in abattoirs were who worked with aerosolized pig brains were coming down with? I'm not sure if you recall that. Well, it's a horror.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I do. But...
Okay, well, it's a horrible disease, and it's untreatable, except by symptoms, and it is neurological, and it is a prion disease. That is a brand new one. But as soon as they discovered that it was a prion disease and they couldn't quite figure it out, the whole topic dropped out of the news, which I thought was quite intriguing. It's quite closely related to mad cow and to Kuru disease, which is, I believe, is a South Sea Island group of people who are cannibals, have been subject to, and only them. Prions, I suspect, are the result of something that is actually very close to what's naturally inside our body. In other words, collagen, like squalene is collagen, and
okay.
It's causing a great deal of disease. If something is enters the body in a natural way, but is a natural part of the body, like squalene is with collagen, the body, if in the case of vaccines and probably just other overstimulation, the body can look at it and say, oh, that's an enemy. Let's go attack it. So in the case of squalene, the body could go out and it start attacking collagen. In the case of rheumatoid arthritis, the body attacks collagen. And I suspect that these diseases are more related to that. The prions are really an autoimmune response to something that comes to the body through a natural manner, as a rule, maybe not exclusively, but as a rule, and the body is overreacts to it.
So
does the
body attack its own collagen? So
precisely.
Okay, so what you're saying, it's recognizing that there's something foreign because it's not matching the body's own tissue and collagen, so it's not able to differentiate which of the cells are the foreign ones from, like we have Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, which is a prion disease, and the chronic mm-hmm. wasting disease, which you mentioned, and the bovine spongiform encephalopathy. And these really, they go into the brain, into the nervous system, and cause havoc. For these people, because it is autoimmune, meaning that the body is attacking itself. And so when mm-hmm. these are introduced, I've seen programs where they show how ground meat is made, where they just grind together everything from hundreds of different organisms, the fat, the meat, muscle tissue, and even the bone, and it all gets ground up together and contaminates itself, and that's where you can get this this protein, right? And so what about the flu mist? You're saying that there's something in that similarly?
I can't say specifically, and I'm not off the top of my head aware of what the adjuvants are, and that's where you would find most of the risk in that respect. So,
okay.
And there are adjuvants in it, but they're not the standard ones that you're usually going to find in an injected vaccine. But if there's anything in it, like squalene, which would be a natural adjuvant to use with that sort of a vaccine, then you're dealing with something that is potentially harmful. And the only thing that I would say that is somewhat different from what you're saying, the problem is not that it is similar to, something that is identical to what's in the body. It's
mm-hmm.
a protein that is found in the body. And pigs, by the way, why would it be pigs' brains and not cow brains that cause this? It's because pigs are actually very, very close anatomically, believe it or not, and chemically, to humans. And it's that similarity that's actually the risk. By inhaling a lot of something that, in other words,
right.
inhaling a lot of something that normally would not be a problem to you if it's ingested in a normal way, but it comes through the nasal passages and the body says, oh, I've got a lot of this stuff. It doesn't belong here. Let's go get it. And unfortunately, that something, as in collagen, as in rheumatoid arthritis, it's actually part of the body. And so the
right.
body starts creating antibodies to things in its own body. Does that make sense?
This is where we get
This
is where we get into trouble, where people are coming. So many people now are coming down with these diseases.
Well, let me bring that to today's article.
Okay.
The title is Vaccinations Inevitably Cause Autoimmune Diseases, PLOS Study. a recent study, and it is a very good one, gives the information about the fact that in mice, and mice are, in this instance, I think we can say mice are close enough to humans that we can extrapolate to humans, and we must extrapolate to humans until we know otherwise, that chronic diseases are caused by literally too many vaccinations. And mice that were bred to be completely free of autoimmune diseases can always be forced to have autoimmune diseases that are like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, and so forth. The list is immense as a result of simply giving them too many vaccines, and 8 vaccines was too many.
Well, does this mean that fewer vaccines might be okay?
I can't answer that. I think, number one, we're all different. One person might have the bad response right from the very first one. I think it's safe to say that that's the case. Some people probably don't have that big a problem, and then other people may have mild cases. I can't answer that. I don't know. What I do know is that we're playing with fire, and we are seeing a massive rise in autoimmune disorders, many of which people don't even realize are autoimmune disorders. But it's become the way we live. It is becoming the way we die.
It's becoming the new norm, you know, and that's the scary part, is that we've come in, autoimmune diseases and chronic disease is so common, we've come in to accept that as normal.
I agree
completely. Or moving certainly in that direction anyway.
I agree completely. I think the average child nowadays is not healthy, and I think it's tragic. But when you consider how many children have diabetes, which has an autoimmune component to it, type 2 diabetes when I was a kid did not exist in children. It simply did not exist in children. It was a disease of the old, period. And now it's common. And you look at asthma in children. I remember the one kid in my school when I was in grade school who had asthma. Everybody knew who that kid was because that kid was unique. I remember the one kid who had severe allergies. Everybody knew him because he was unique. Now, they're in every classroom. This
right.
is not right. This is
so
not normal.
One of the people who was interested in listening to today's show did ask specifically whether the flu mist will initiate an allergy. And one of the things that I love about your articles is they are so statistically and scientifically detailed with charts, graphs, numbers, how many people have each of these diseases, and you really go into depth with it.
Oh, thanks. I think that I cannot say that flu mist will cause allergies. I can say that it's probably somewhat less likely to cause allergies, but it's, you know, just the fact that it's introducing an antigen into the body, according to this study that I've just reported on today, the introduction of the antigens, too many antigens right there is enough to cause autoimmune disorders. So asthma is an autoimmune disorder. I would say that, yes, it certainly can be part of it, but I would not want to say that this vaccine will cause allergies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that that's a fair statement because everybody's different, and two, we're also dealing in terms of numbers of vaccines.
Do you think that's
significant?
Do you think that the human body is changing because of the introduction of all of these ingredients? Let's say they don't do the injection anymore. Alan and I have discussed other means of introducing these vaccines into the body, and you have an article about putting it into our food and ways of injecting without a needle, and now the flu mist, and so they're being very creative to make it easier to get into the body and not so frightening as an injection. But what is happening to our bodies? Are they changing because of this?
Well, they have to. I can't tell you that we're getting teratogenic diseases that or conditions. Those are birth defects from these. I really can't say that. I simply have no information on it, and I have not seen any. Although there are certainly many drugs that do cause such things. But in terms of the individual, absolutely, it's changing our bodies. It's causing autoimmune disorders. That's a massive change in a body. So I guess any way to avoid that.
I guess what I'm asking is, if a generation grows up with vaccinations and their immune system has developed in a new way, and then they have children and create a new generation, the evolution of humanity to these new kids, I guess that's really what I'm asking.
Well, again, I can't give a really, I can't give you a definitive answer. I do think that, yes, we are playing with it. If we consider the gut, we consider the gut biota, all of the bacteria that really make up our digestive systems, then the answer is certainly it has to be changing it, and that is also something that is inherited directly from our mothers. So, yes, we certainly are making a permanent change, and that is an evolutionary change, literally. As far as the rest of the body, I can't really say, unless if the vaccine is somehow changing the DNA, then the answer would be yes. But I've not seen anything that tells me that that is the case. I'm not saying it's not. And at this point, I don't trust that there's any study that's been done that will show that it doesn't, because those studies aren't done to look for safety. But I've not seen anything that indicates that it does. Does that make sense? Because I don't want to make a claim that I can't support, and I can't support that anything but the gut bacteria would definitively be changed.
Well, I certainly appreciate and respect your integrity there. It's really so important for any of us in an alternative or minority view, I think, to be particularly careful, exactly like you're doing. I think there probably are, I'm going to go out on a short limb here, hopefully, there are some, and I know of one in particular that comes to mind, homeopaths and perhaps other holistic health practitioners who maybe see some sort of empirical evidence for that in their clinical practices. Or otherwise, people who come to opinions where they see that there may be a generational element to this, that as we vaccinate and continue to vaccinate more and more, and that there is within the population as a whole, there's going to be a broad immunosuppressive and or other impact on us collectively, and that can perhaps, and Debbie or Heidi, help me out here, is the word, and then homeopathy miasm is the one I'm looking for, because I remember a homeopath mm-hmm. talking about this, that then on some level, energetic level or some level, can potentially transfer to subsequent generations who are now being born affected because of their parents' vaccinations.
I would
in some
agree
way.
With that. I agree that that's almost certainly happening. I think that if you're going to look at it that way, you also need to consider everything that's happening in the environment. And that includes, we have to consider what's happening, all the chemicals out there, the bisphenol that's found in baby bottles and all of this sort of thing. That's all part of it. And it is very difficult to distinguish one from another. I think that this is one of our biggest problems today, is that this trying to drive everything down to the smallest tiny element and saying, oh, well, that tiny element didn't cause this. Whereas the reality is, it probably was part of it. So we can't really always say that, gee, the vaccine was the whole thing, or that particular chemical was the whole thing. It's probably all of the above. But I'm convinced at this point that the biggest problem we're facing today is the result of vaccines. I am totally convinced at this point. And it took me a long time to come to that point, by the way. I'm hard to convince on some things. I'm rather hard-headed.
So it's a large factor in disease today. And you know,
it's a huge one.
Yeah, I mean, on your website, Gaia Health, you do have the area category for the environment, which we are all very concerned about how much it is being polluted, and we're concerned about a lot of different things in the world today. But in terms of health, vaccines play such a huge part, and they are being pushed more and more as a solution to disease rather than looking at it by the medical establishment as the cause of disease. And that's why we appreciate your articles. Did you want to go through any one of your articles in particular and tell us some more about that?
Well, I'm not sure that I want to really necessarily focus on one. I really am pleased with today's article, to be quite frank, because I think it is important, and it is the first thing that is really this definitive, that not only shows a definite cause and effect between vaccinations and autoimmune disorders, but it even, it does actually get into the actual method by which it happens. So we're looking at something very solid here, and very, very important.
So you know that the medical establishment is constantly saying that it's the repetition, that proof is repeating an experiment over and over and getting the same result. And if this is what you're showing in terms of you're doing this action with a vaccine and you're finding this response in the organism, and that's what you're showing in your latest article about vaccinations. It's called Vaccinations Inevitably Cause Autoimmune Diseases.
Yes. It's actually very clearly stated in the author's introduction. I'll read that. It's quite brief. And understand that the authors are Japanese, and so there are words missing like the and a, but it's still quite clear. It says, the method we have chosen was to stimulate the system maximally by antigen to the levels far beyond its steady state. That means, you know, that natural balance, right? Just like testing the capability of an automobile. In a perfectly reproducible experiment in which the mice not prone to autoimmune diseases, pardon me, I'm trying to read it as if, as we would say it, in which mice not prone to autoimmune diseases were immunized repeatedly with an antigen, we have unexpectedly and surprisingly discovered that overstimulation of the immune system beyond its self-organized criticality inevitably leads to systemic autoimmunity.
Mm-hmm. That it seems kind of logical. What you said right there just seems sort of logical from a common sense point of view. If you overstimulate the immune system, you're going to cause it to dysfunction. So it seems odd to me that they're saying they were surprised to find that. But I'm sorry. Please go on.
No, that basically is it. I think that you don't find a statement as definitive as that in a scientific study normally. And this is, the PLOS, which is not, it's not even an overly friendly journal for anti-vaccination, to be quite frank. So it makes it particularly stunning that they made such a definitive statement.
And don't we think about diseases like or illnesses like ADHD, ADD, as from overstimulating the body? When people, go into this nervous disorder. So in the study, they actually go into the minutiae of the T cells and the killer cells and the white blood cells. So they're really taking a very scientific approach, and you've got even photographs of blood cells, or I guess blood samples, that looks like what, or tissue samples in there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. They came directly out of the study. And they show, the first one is showing eosinophils, which are a type of white blood cell. And what you see, they're both the, exactly the same multiplication of microscope, 400 times. And you can see that these, the eosinophils, as a direct, in the kidneys, pardon me, let me be specific, as a direct result of having 12 vaccinations. Now, of course, these are more quickly delivered than we usually get them today, but I'll come back to that in a moment. These eosinophils are swelling up to more than double the size. That's not normal. That says that it's going out attacking something, because that's what they do. And it means, in this case, they are attacking something that belongs in the body. This is not right. And as far as the number, this is 12 times. We are just about to start giving children 9 vaccinations in one day, all at once.
Well, explain this.
Okay. This in this study, as far as the, how significant it is, how immediately significant, we're giving children more and more vaccines all the time, and they're coming closer and closer together. And how many are we now routinely giving children in one day? 3, 4, 5, 6, not very uncommon at all. And there's an, a likely addition of a new vaccine, and I haven't gotten in, studied it to know much about it, but it will involve a couple more in one shot that will be added to the schedule, and it will probably mean that we'll start seeing up to 9 doses of antigens in one child, small child, in one day. That's massive. Because
I just can't get it in my head. Who is thinking that this is going to be a positive outcome?
Well, Paul Offit.
Pharma.
Yeah, Paul Offit, you know, a widely respected mainstream pro-vaccine advocate and vaccine researcher, has said that the body could handle, and I don't remember if he was saying tens of thousands or 100,000, you know, vaccines. It's really limitless. And with that as sort of a founding principle from a very reputable and respected in the mainstream world anyway, you know, that is kind of the mandate, that the door is just sort of wide open to go as fast and far as we can. I mean, the figure I saw from 2 years ago, Heidi, was that there were over 330 vaccines either already on the market or in development at that time. And with every man, woman, and child on the planet being a potential recipient of vaccines throughout their life, beginning with the moment of birth, it's just an enormous market. And with no liability here in the U.S. for the adverse effects, I mean, the government gets involved in subsidizing the research, subsidizing the building of the vaccine manufacturing plants. We've got a still fairly new pandemic flu plant here in North Carolina, just from a couple of years ago, a billion-dollar plant. The government, federal government, subsidized that to a figure over $400 million. Mm-hmm. And then the government turns around and buys the vaccines, and then the government turns around and pays for the compensation when you can get it for the injury and death from them. I mean, from a pure dispassionate put all morality and ethics and compassion aside, from a pure, cold, calculating financial point of view, what could be a better business, and what could be a better invitation to develop as many vaccines as quickly as you can? But I have a question for you about that with regard to the multiple antigens, because it would seem to me that the potential risks or harm from vaccines comes from could be the antigens themselves and or the other ingredients that end up in vaccines, adjuvants and preservatives and whatnot. And I'm wondering what you think, if any, difference one way or another, how risks of harm might vary or change with multiple shots to get some, you know, let's say 9, as you were saying, 9 antigens versus fewer shots to get 9 antigens. The same amount of antigens, but it would, at least in theory, be fewer of some of these other vaccine ingredients. Do you think that's going to, in any positive way bode well
that's
for the...
That's absolutely... I think that's an absolute disaster. It's taking a bad situation, and I suspect it's multiplying it, because we're seeing that clearly now. We have clear documentation now that shows that the more you give, the worse it gets.
But if you're giving more antigens in a single shot, you're getting less of the other ingredients, right? And so I'm just wondering if you think that has any, if there's any difference in the risk.
Yeah.
Well, I think that you're talking about different risks. In other words, the antigens themselves are one part of the risk. And obviously, the antigens themselves, even if we exclude the adjuvants, which are horrible, just the number of antigens and the stimulation based on that is a very, very bad mistake. And this study didn't get into how closely spaced what difference the spacing makes, but we do have some empirical evidence that indicates spacing does improve the results in terms of disease. But then when we start considering what the adjuvants are and the fact that each adjuvant actually adds to the stimulation. That's their purpose, because these vaccines don't do what little good they do, which is minimal, but what little good they do is achieved only through the use of adjuvants, unless we're talking about live vaccines, like the nasal sprays. And
the nasal sprays may be a better direction, but do we really know what's in them?
Let me put it this way. I don't think it's a better direction. I think it's a different direction.
Okay.
It has terrible results. I don't think there is any way to do this in safety or in anything approaching safety. But the difference is that you're experiencing different risks by it. I think that your risk of prion diseases increases through the administration through the nose. But I think that your risk of many other diseases like autism is probably increased through the adjuvants.
Okay.
That through injections. So there's no way to come up with a nice clean answer. I don't think you can say that one is better or one is worse. I think they're both bad, and nobody has really investigated to see exactly what the results of each will be, and of course, obviously, there isn't a terrible will to do so. But
and
I think
of course,
that it's safe to say they're both bad.
If it weren't complicated enough unto itself, you add the additional external environmental factors, anything from toxins in the air and food and water to food additives or GMOs and so forth. There's just a whole long list of things that acting individually or in combination, in concert, can produce an incredibly broad range of potential health problems. And it must be just virtually impossible to tie many, if not most, of those down to a specific source exclusively or a combination of sources, unless you have something that happens in close timing. You have a perfectly healthy child, you give them a vaccine, and somewhere within the next few minutes, hours, or days, you see something that you can't really explain any other way. But what's so insidious about vaccines to me is in my understanding, in my personal research as a parent over the years, it seems that some of these things can manifest quite a bit down the road, months, even years or decades later, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, Heidi, that they have in recent years cultured SV40 viruses in certain human cancers, which may very well have come from some of the early polio vaccines, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just insidious in the sense that it just, particularly the further out in time, I would think, the more difficult it is to even come up with the question, let alone the answer. Is this connected to vaccines and or other factors?
Well, I think that autoimmune diseases are a perfect example of exactly that, because they tend to develop very, very slowly. So it could be 20 years from the trigger, or even 30 before we know. But after all, the majority of autoimmune diseases we don't usually see in the small children. but we are seeing them in people starting in their 30s, certainly, and even earlier. I mean, gut diseases are certainly very common now in people in their 20s. But we usually see people at least in their 30s or 40s before they develop multiple sclerosis, for example, that sort of thing. So, yeah, that distance makes it much easier to continue pushing these things because, well, you know, the big pharma, and I hate to say it, but it seems the doctors, too, don't seem to be too terribly concerned about what happens later. It's all about now, this moment. There's no balance.
And that raises a really serious and unfortunate legal question as well, because there was just in recent months a federal court decision concerning, in this particular instance, perhaps ironically, a medical doctor had a vaccine injury. And in order to qualify to be able to file a petition to the Injury Compensation Program, you have to have sustained symptoms or injury for 6 months or longer. Well, she had intermittent symptoms over a period of years and then developed full-blown MS, I believe, eventually. And the ruling, the issue in the court case was, when does the statute of limitations start? Because you have only 3 years to get a petition in to the compensation program. And the bizarre ruling of the court was that since her filing of the petition fell outside a three-year period, and then the question is, well, shouldn't that three-year period only start running at the point that she qualifies? And the court ultimately said no. And so there's a whole category of people who can't file petitions now. They can't even file a petition to see if they can get compensation if the point at which they qualify falls, you know, 3 years or more after the shot. So it's very disturbing.
Well, this is typical, actually, of the legal system with regard to any iatrogenic illness. Quite frankly, most states have a two-year limit from the time of injury. And if you don't know you were injured within that period of time, you can't do anything about it. Not that you can do much anyway.
Well, in the conventional tort system, the statute of limitations wouldn't start running until, and this is just a general legal principle, but until the person knew or should have known. And so one reasonably could not be in the position of should have known unless the medical community is generally aware. Is there published research on it or something else? So there are in law, there are situations and circumstances where you can where the clock on the statute of limitations is what they call tolled, or that is, it doesn't start running, or if it has started, it stops for some period of time for one reason or another. There are often laws that address the way that works on a more common sense level, but one of the arguments in this case I was just talking about was talking about how in the traditional tort system, this wouldn't be an issue. And why is it an issue here then in vaccine injury? Because when Congress enacted this act in the first place, one of the stated intentions was to make it easier for people to get compensation than going through the state tort system systems that we had in place. And now this ruling has made it more difficult, just the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So, disturbing.
Well, it is disturbing. I guess I would just say that I'm not surprised. That does seem to be what happens with these things. The stated reason for them, like the recent laws that have been happening all over the world, in fact, about food, about our access to foods or information about foods, is it's all predicated on the idea that it's to our benefit. But the reality is, obviously, it's not. There's something else going on in the background that's causing these things to happen, and that includes, obviously, vaccines.
Well, Heidi, the hour is running by quickly. I would love if you could talk a little bit about
You may keep talking if you wish. I have extended the hour if you wish. If anybody is available,
gosh.
It's up to you. We can close at any time. Just give the signal. I wanted to mention that you know, we think about disease over decades coming out into our awareness. So, for instance, They do recognize that if you've been exposed to asbestos, that you will get cancer a decade later, more than a decade later. And in the same way, if you're exposed to all of these adjuvants and to these vaccine ingredients, to the antigens, that we really could be having a response or developing that response over decades. And you would imagine that would be recognized and accepted as fact by the scientific community, by the physicians, by the medical community and researchers. And in a way, what you're saying, Alan, by the fact that they give you this teeny tiny window of time to make a claim, is that they're not accepting the human nature, natural law, that things don't always happen in the immediacy of that time, but over a period of time.
I think that's well stated.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a general legal principle behind just statutes of limitations generally, that the older the evidence, the less reliable it is. It's a very general idea, but it has to do with why we have a statute of limitations at all. Why can't somebody bring a case anytime they want to? And the theory is that there needs to be a cutoff point that we just say, look, beyond this point, it's just not reasonable. In some areas of law, I think that's probably a reasonable general concept, but it doesn't feel to me like in many situations it's appropriate at all to have a statute of limitations, or at least not on the range that a lot of them tend to be. So I find it just kind of unsettling as a general concept. I feel like it's unnecessarily limiting people's rights to address wrongs.
Well, I would also like to point out that the example used was asbestos causing cancer. But you consider how many years it took before it was accepted that asbestos caused cancer. Once that happened, then people could sue. Until that time, you really couldn't. And that's where we're at with vaccines. It is not accepted that vaccines can cause all of these problems. And therefore, it makes it next to impossible to sue. Yes, occasionally somebody can, but that's like the exception proving the rule.
Right. And of course, we saw that with the tobacco, where there were doctors as far back as the late 1800s saying tobacco can cause cancer, and yet it was, 1950s, I think, before the federal government first started acknowledging that. But, I mean, many decades later, and even decades after that, before I think probably it was really broadly accepted, and now it's common fact. But we'll see vaccines eventually, I believe, too. But
it's so massive, the numbers, the number of children and families who have been touched by it. It's almost as if they can't even conceive of this being true, because it would mean so much to their theories, to their investment in finances, in the systems that they've put into place, into marketing, into every facet of life, that it would upset the apple cart. It would do so much that change is very difficult.
Well, a perfect example of that is the Andrew Wakefield case, quite frankly, because the can of worms that he opened was a specific one. And it was the fact that the particular vaccine, the Urabi MMR vaccine, was the issue that he was studying. And that vaccine was unique in that it was known to be dangerous. It was accepted by the manufacturer to be dangerous, and the manufacturer refused to sell it to the UK government, which is ultimately responsible, unless the manufacturer received a waiver. So the issue here is that the UK government itself is on the hook for all of these children who have autism as a result. And that's why Wakefield is so specifically attacked, because he brought up the specific case that hangs the UK government. So it does come down to money, ultimately. All of this does, unfortunately. It comes down to money in terms of whether we're going to accept the vaccines that are so dangerous. It comes down to money and the fact that it's that they're being pushed because they're a nice, easy way to make a lot of money quickly.
Do you feel that more physicians are coming out in favor or against vaccinations, rather, like Susanna Humphreys, who have explicit information to define why she is against them?
Well, she's absolutely wonderful, absolutely brilliant in her discussions and arguments. I don't think anybody does it better than she does. I think, though, that any doctor who does come out and make these statements is putting his entire career on the line. It's a doctor can easily lose a license to practice. So I don't know how many are actually questioning on their own. I understand that there are more and more who are, but even of those who do question, most of them are actually still giving the vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
So I suspect more know, but there aren't many who are willing to speak out.
I thought I might mention a brand new, it's updated from March 2006, so I don't know whether this is a contemporary article, but it says a former government medical officer responsible for deciding whether medicines are safe has accused the government of, quote, utterly inexplicable complacency, unquote, over the MMR triple vaccine for children. That's an article on the dailymail.co.uk in the health section. Mm-hmm. And I received this message just yesterday, and so it's by Dr. Peter Fletcher, who was chief scientific officer at the Department of Health, said, if it is proven that the jab causes autism, quote, the refusal by governments to evaluate the risks properly will make this one of the greatest scandals in medical history, unquote.
I am familiar with that. I'm familiar with Peter Fletcher. And Peter Fletcher came under immense pressure. And at this point, Peter Fletcher will not speak out on the topic any longer,
mm-hmm.
even though he is no longer even practicing. So it gives you some idea about the kind of pressure involved here.
Right, even it's, authorities.
Exactly, exactly. Andrew Wakefield lost his license to practice in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
He lost his career. I'm not sure what his current status is. I mean, I know that he has a lawsuit in the U.S., and I wish him all the best in it. I do believe the man was absolutely railroaded. There's no question in my mind. But he has a hard road to hoe here. This is not easy, and I truly admire the man for his courage in sticking with it, standing up, and not backing down. That really takes a great deal because he's put his entire life, his entire life on the line because he cares.
Alan, you know, the reason that we do these shows is that we want to encourage people to be informed, educated, and take action to protect their family, to protect their own health, and to take legislative action and get involved in what's happening in their local community and in their state. So if you have anything to tell us about your e-vaccine, your e-book about exemptions and waivers, and anything else before we close the show, I would like to have Heidi. I don't know where that came from. But
it's been a day like that for me as well, if it's any consolation.
I have been really doing a lot of computer stuff. Maybe it's changing the wires in my brain. So, Heidi, you know, this has been a great show with you, and anytime you want to come on, just let us know, and we'll work it out.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it thoroughly, absolutely, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
Well, it's been terrific. If you know, your information is well researched, well thought through, thought provoking and informative, and I just highly recommend you and your information and website to listeners. It's GAIA. Now, is it dash or hyphen health dot com? Hyphen health dot com. Okay.
Yes.
GAIA hyphen health dot com. Heidi
Stevenson. You can also enter. You can enter .org or .net, by the way. It'll take you to the same place.
Great. Well, that was well thought through as well. Evidence of your great planning there. If you decide that you don't want to vaccinate and you're in a situation where you have requirements, look at the vaccinerights.com website for lots of good information to get you started down that path. Many times people can get exemptions or waivers from immunizations with a very simple process, write a short statement or check a box on a form or something like that. Other times it's much more complicated, and so there are situations where it could be helpful, if not critical, in the more complicated arenas to consider doing a consultation with a knowledgeable attorney in the area, if you can find one. There's very few of us out there. But Heidi, we'd love to have you back again. We just scratched the surface of your work and even just the current events, and lots more information that I'd love to have the opportunity to go a little more in-depth into or to discuss. So I hope you'll consider coming back. We'd love to have you.
Well, thank you very much. And I do want to reiterate what I said before. I did mean it, that you really are very, very good, and I've noticed, I saw your recent piece on Natural News about the form that people are trying to ask doctors to sign to acknowledge the risks that they're taking in vaccinating the child, and your advice that maybe it's not such a good idea, I think, was excellent. You tell people the way it is. You don't necessarily tell people what they want to hear, but that's exactly what people need.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Sometimes I get myself in a little bit of trouble because of it, but I feel like I need to call it like I see it and do the best I can to have those calls be as helpful as possible, as I'm sure you do as well in your work.
Oh, absolutely. So I want to say thank you, Debbie.
You're very welcome.
I appreciate it. And I think I'll say it's time, probably say, since it's evening and it's dinner time for me over here, good night.
Good night to you. Right. Have a great night. And if any listeners would like to speak with Alan, he does give lectures, give talks, presentations for people who are interested in this topic of the legalities of vaccinations and what your rights are, whether you are talking about being in the military, in the health field, going into hospitals, having kids go to school. You know, there's a whole list of people who are coming into the country, just a whole list of different types of situations that he can address for you. So I'm going to close the show and listen to Alan sing us out. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S. with co-hosts Alan Phillips and Debbie Bruck on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to educate before you vaccinate.
Allow our souls to shine. Girl, one by one.